Recently, I had an awesome trip to Italy with some of the couples from our parish, which I love doing. And I think we had 7 or 8 couples that went with us. And during the trip over to Italy, they renew their wedding vows, and we have the blessing of the rings. It's really beautiful. I love it. And we were in Venice for part of it, and you know, I've never been on a gondola because it's kind of a, let's be honest, it's kind of a touristy thing to do, so I never felt called to be the gondola guy. But I got on the gondola, and we're going through Venice canals, and I asked the gondolier who was kind of driving, and I said, where's a good place for us to eat? Oh, Father, you must go to this restaurant. This is so good. It's my cousin. And I'm like, of course it's my cousin. I said, what's the name of the restaurant? He said, he said in Italian, Diavolo et Acqua Santa, the devil and the holy water. I said, you're kidding me, right? He said, no, this is the name of the restaurant. You know, you like. And I said, okay. So we go to the devil and the holy water restaurant in this little back alley in Venice. We get in there, we sit down. And I told the waiter, I said, look, if you happen to run out of holy water, I know the recipe to make more, okay? I can help you with that. But I'm happy to report that the devil must be a good cook because the food was excellent. It was really good food. It was really good. So anyway, right near the devil in the holy water restaurant in Venice, there's a church called San Lorenzo. Does anybody know who's buried at the church of St. Lawrence in Venice? Marco Polo. Marco Polo is buried there. As you know, he was born there in Venice, grew up in Venice, Italian to his core. Okay? And so Marco Polo, he wasn't a saint, but one of the things that he, I think, did an excellent job with is they say, historians will say that Marco Polo was very, very honest. And not only being honest with other people, when other people would bring things to him, he would listen. It's one of the reasons he was so good. Keeping in mind at the time, the spice trade was much more valuable than even gold. Okay? Because it would have been very easy for him to become corrupted with his wealth, but he didn't. What does it mean to be honest? What does it mean to be honest? Well, for one thing, it's not just that we don't lie, that's part of it. But when we're honest, what it means, I think, is that we speak the truth, we live the truth, and we hear the truth. We speak the truth. Sometimes it needs to be said, even when nobody wants to say it. Anybody that's come from a dysfunctional family knows what I'm talking about. We live the truth, we're not living two lives. And we hear it when people bring it to our attention. It stings a little bit, but we need to hear it, right? The truth. Those of you that may have done employee evaluations or yourself been evaluated, you know, this is what we're trying to do, right? What are the pros? What are you doing well? What do we need to work on? What are the goals for this year, right? With that in mind, when we talk about honesty, it might just be a good idea for us to step back a little bit and look at this thing we call the Catholic Church, right? All 1.4 billion of us. What are some of the things that the Catholic Church is doing well, and what are the things that we need to work on, right? We'll call it three and three. Three things we're doing well. Well, number one, do you know that in the Catholic world, we run over 100,000 clinics for AIDS patients around the world? 100,000 clinics for AIDS patients around the world. Free. The Catholic Church is the largest non-governmental provider of health care in the world. Do you know that we have 18,000 clinics for women around the world? For low-income women? 18,000. We have almost 6,000 Catholic hospitals. This says nothing, of course, about what we do for education. Lord knows we can always grow, but I think we're doing our part to help those in need. It's something to be proud of. Number two, do you know that this Easter, we had record numbers of people entering the Catholic faith? And not only that, we had record numbers of people returning to the Catholic faith, which you will never hear about in the media. It's not just the people entering the faith, it's that they left at some point and came back. Number three, do you know that we're about to ordain about 500 young priests in this country? Average age, 31. One of them is from this parish and will be ordained from this parish, Father Rolando. Doing our part. Awesome, awesome guy. What do we need to work on? Well, how much time do we have, Father? We have things to work on. I want to underscore to you, everyone here, what I'm about to tell you is Father Ben's opinion. Feel free to throw it out, okay? When you're a spiritual leader in the Catholic world or the Protestant world or any world, pick a church, all right? You have to wear two hats. You're a spiritual leader, but you're also an administrator. What does that mean? It means you have to keep the shop going, so to speak. We've got bills to pay, you know? There's a business aspect to it. We all have bills to pay. So you're wearing two hats. Here's the irony, and this is why I'm telling you this. I don't know a single priest, not one, that ever spent one day in the seminary studying business or business administration. Isn't that ironic? It's a whole lot about Thomas Aquinas and St. Augustine, which is great, but that's a small percentage of what we do. I know a priest in a diocese in the United States who arrived in this country from Africa and within 24 hours was made a pastor with no training. Good luck. Here's a thought. Maybe we could give them a little training. Or at least they could ask people in the pews that know, that do this for a living, to train us. Okay? One man's opinion, take it for what you want. Number two, does anybody know what the average age of a Catholic priest in this country is? It's about 38,000 Catholic priests in this country. Average age, 70. There is one Catholic priest in this country for every 3,000 Catholics, roughly. There's well over 3,000 families, not people, families in this parish. Yes, we have a growing faith, and that's awesome. But as Jesus tells us many times, the harvest is abundant, but the laborers are few. Boy, is that ever true. We need help, and we need your help getting us help. Number three, cliques. Cliques. You know, they've done study after study after study on young people. What attracts them to faith? Not just the Catholic faith, any faith, what repulses them from faith? One of the things that repulses young people from any faith, pick a faith, is clickiness. You know, they encounter this at school with some of the popular people and the in people. The last place they should encounter it is where? Church. But there are some churches, as you may have heard me say, you have to rub shoulders with the right people, you know, and be with the in crowd to be somebody important. Otherwise, we don't really want you. I can tell you I'm highly allergic to that thinking. To that point, look around you. I think we have a pretty diverse parish. Granted, you're biased, Father. Okay, I'm biased. But after Mass today, go across the parking lot here to our Cinco de Mayo festival. Just come. Buy a taco. And one of the things you will notice is a very international flavor, so to speak, of this parish. It's something to be proud of by God. It really is. Honesty is how we grow. Whether it's a person, whether it's a family, whether it's a marriage, whether it's a parish, whether it's a church, we have to be honest. And not only in what we have to work on, what are we doing well? I'll close with this. You know, at the same time the founding fathers of this country were signing the Declaration of Independence, there was a man in France who was dying. His name was Voltaire. Anybody ever heard of Voltaire? Yeah, a little bit? Okay. So Voltaire was, he wrote for many, many years. And one of the things that was the number one topic of his disgust, his hatred, the Catholic Church. He hated the Catholic Church. Wrote for many years attacking Catholicism. Well, a funny thing happened. Towards the end of his life, he met somebody, the Pope, Pope Benedict XIV. And you may not have ever heard of Benedict XIV, but you no doubt have heard about what he did. Anybody ever heard of the Trevi Fountain? Yeah, you go to the Trevi Fountain, you throw in a coin. Best gelato place in Rome is right next to the Trevi Fountain. It's convenient. I saw one man, he meant to throw a coin over his shoulder. He threw his gelato over his shoulder. Don't do that. So he met Pope Benedict XIV, and they started a conversation. And he just vented his anger towards Catholicism. And the Pope didn't respond. It's like, okay. Okay. That's good, thank you. Just listen. Didn't get defensive. Just listen. At the end of his life, Voltaire, a man who'd spent most of his life attacking Christianity, was given last rites by the Catholic Church and given a Catholic burial. To this day, he's buried at the Pantheon in Paris, right next to Victor Hugo and Jean-Jacques Rousseau. Lord's got a sense of humor. This is why I'm telling you this story. In Voltaire's defense, he was courageous enough by God to be honest, and the Pope was humble enough to hear that honesty. When we talk about what it means to be honest, folks, it's not just about not lying. That's part of it. It's about speaking the truth, living the truth, and hearing the truth when spoken to us.